Now, we've begun a study in the book of Jeremiah. We really are interested in how we are to look at that Old Testament book. As a matter of fact, we're going to find that the book of Jeremiah is very much an up-to-date book. It's really a book that is dealing with what is happening in our world today, particularly in the church world. And we're going to go down to chapter 2. Chapter 2. But now, yet, let's read Jeremiah 2, verse 2. Thus saith the Lord, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in the wilderness, in a land that was not sown. Now, the land that was not sown, that is the wilderness. But it is also talking about a time right at the very beginning of something. If we, on the other hand, now go to another Jerusalem, namely the New Testament church, and let's start right out with the question, can we identify that with any biblical authority as identified with Jerusalem? To start out with, let's look at Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4. We better lay a little bit of groundwork here, where we read in verse 25, this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. Now, what God is saying here is that there are two Jerusalems, spiritually speaking. There is a Jerusalem that is below, that is in bondage with her children, that is, who are still under the law of God. That is, they are not saved. They are trying to get to heaven by their good works, or they think they're saved, but they're actually not saved. They are not free. They're still in bondage to their sin and to the law of God. And every congregation of the New Testament, beginning at the very beginning, had a percentage of people that were of this kind, who thought they were saved and actually had not become saved. Later on, in a moment, we're going to look at the churches of the New Testament, and they had a Jezebel, and they had the Laodiceans, and they had other false prophets in them who claimed they were saved, and yet they altogether were not saved. That is like Jerusalem below. The Jerusalem above consists of those who have become saved. The moment that we become saved, where is our citizenship? It's in heaven. We are seated with Christ. Now, we're dispatched instantly to serve as an ambassador of God here to this sin-cursed world, but we are citizens of the Jerusalem above. And so, when we look at the corporate external church, as we find it represented all through the world, we find it is made of two kinds of people. Jerusalem above, which could identify also with the gold, silver, and precious stones of 1 Corinthians 3. And there is the Jerusalem below that would identify with the wood, hay, stubble of 1 Corinthians 3. That is the Jerusalem that exists in this world. Now, is this the Jerusalem that Jeremiah has in view? Well, let's look at the beginning of this Jerusalem that consists of the churches and congregations that have arisen all over the world. Go to Revelation chapter 1. Revelation chapter 2. In Revelation chapter 2, God is telling us about the beginning of the New Testament church. And we're already into the beginning. The actual beginning, we'd have to say, was at Pentecost, when about 3,000 are saved. So that already meant there were about 3,000 who had an intense love for God right at the very outset. But now a few years have gone by, and now God is giving us a look at seven churches that did exist, and we will see that within these churches, the language of Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 2, does fit. We look, for example, at the church at Ephesus, and we read in verse 2, and church at Ephesus, I know thy works and thy labor and thy patience, and how thou canst not bear them that are evil, and that thou hast tried them which say they are apostles and are not, and hast found them liars, and hast borne, and hast patience, and for my name's sake hast labored, and hast not fainted. Now that's beautiful language. That's the language of Jeremiah 2. I know the love of thy espousals. In other words, the honeymoon is still going on, and there's an intense love going on in the church at Ephesus because there are true believers there. Then we go on and we look at the church at Smyrna. And we look at verse 9 of Revelation 2. I know thy works and tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich. And I know the blasphemy of them that say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that ye may be tried, and that ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. Beautiful language that could apply to any church that loves the Lord. And it identifies with Jeremiah chapter 2. I know, I remember thy kindness. I remember thy espousals, the love that you had for me during the honeymoon period when you first had begun to have within you the bride of Christ, which consists of all who are true believers. And then to reinforce this, look at Thyatira in verse 19 of Revelation 2. I know thy works and love, there we have it, and love and service and faith and thy patience and thy works, and the last to be more than the first. Could you think of any more lovely statement than that? This is the early church. I remember the love of thy espousals. I remember how it all began. And here God is telling us how it all began. Then we go down to the church at Sardis. The church at Philadelphia. Verse 8 of Revelation 3, Revelation 8, chapter 3, verse 8, I know thy works, behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it, for thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. And there again you see lovely language. Now, what does this tell you? This is a way that God is declaring to us what the book of Jeremiah is all about. What's the book of Jeremiah all about? Go back to Jeremiah chapter 2. Go back to Jeremiah chapter 2. And we find there that God is saying, go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, thus saith the Lord, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth, the love of thine espousals, when thou wentest after me in a wilderness in a land that was not sown. Is the New Testament church, was it in a wilderness? Well, go back to Revelation 12. Revelation 12, and we know that the New Testament church was in a wilderness. We remember the woman that she brought, verse 5, she brought forth a man-child. That's a body of believers who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. In verse 6, and the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared of God. And that they should feed her there 1,260 days. The New Testament church is typified by this woman, and the world that we live in is a wilderness. It is a wilderness. We're just like the Israelites that came out of Egypt during the 40 years on their way to go into the land of Canaan. It's a wilderness sojourn, and we're completely under the care of God. We have no other protection than from God. Now it speaks of in Jeremiah 2, verse 2, a wilderness that was a land not sown. And that means it's early on. What finally was the area that had to be sown with the gospel? It had to be the wilderness of the world. The gospel had to go out into all the world in order to so that there might be an abundant harvest of plants that would come forth. But this is early on. This identifies with Revelation 2 and 3, that the early church was living in a world that had not yet been sown. They hadn't sent the gospel yet to China. They hadn't sent it all over Europe yet. It had not. There are all kinds of areas of the world that had not heard it yet. This is at the very beginning. And we can match the language of Jeremiah 2, verse 2 beautifully with the language of Revelation 2 and 3 and see the love of thy espousals and so on. Now, if we've done this accurately, it means, therefore, that God is teaching that the book of Jeremiah is not a judgment, a tirade, a warning, an indictment against Israel of old in the first instance, Judah and Jerusalem, although they also are going to be included. But in the first instance, who is it against? The New Testament church. I know thy love of thy espousals. I remember thee, thy kindness in thy youth. And that can only identify with the New Testament church. And so we find here that God is instructing us that as we look at the book of Jeremiah, we don't have to pull our holy rags around us and say, oh boy, those people of Jerusalem, they were bad. Those people that lived in Judea at that time, they were awful. We have to look in the mirror because God is talking about us. He's talking about the church of our day. And so suddenly the book of Jeremiah gets really relevant, because God is setting it up here as to how we are to understand the book of Jeremiah, and it becomes a book that becomes intensely personal, intensely sharp in the hearts of those of us living today. All right, now let's go back to verse 15. God has set the thrones of the enemy at the entrance to Jerusalem and Judea. And we wonder, how does that fit today? Because we've received instruction that this is, first of all, talking about us today. And then we have to go back to passages like, Revelation chapter 9, or let's say Revelation 20, just to begin with, Revelation 20, where God indicates that Satan would be bound for 1,000 years for the completeness of God's plan, and then in verse 3, and after that he must be loosed a little season. Verse 7 of Revelation 20, and when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle. To battle, that is, now can you see it begin to tie in? To set his throne at the gates of Jerusalem and the cities of Judea. And we read as it goes on in verse 9, and they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city. Where is the camp of the saints? The Jerusalem that is composed of the Jerusalem above and the Jerusalem below, the corporate external representation of the kingdom of God as it's found in the churches and the congregations. Satan was typified by ancient Babylon, or King Nebuchadnezzar, who ruled over Babylon, as Babylon is a picture of all the kingdoms of the world, and or the kingdom of Satan. And now God has set it at the entrances to Jerusalem. And that's ominous beyond measure, because nobody can come in or out if Satan has been loosed to be there. God, remember in Revelation 9, God refers to this as he says in Revelation 9, and verse 1, and the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. The bottomless pit has to be a figure of hell, a picture, a representation of hell. Who has the key to hell? Who has the key to hell? Only Christ can open or shut hell. And this key now has been, Christ has come and he opened the bottomless pit. That is, he freed Satan from his inability to harass the church, as he will do so in the great tribulation period. And there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. But notice, there's a limitation to what Satan can do as he sets his throne. This is identifying with Jeremiah chapter 1, where the nations have set their thrones at the entrance into Jerusalem and Judea. Those are the churches and congregations, but there's a limitation. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And in other words, God is saying that Jerusalem and Judea, which is made up of Jerusalem above and Jerusalem beneath, all those who are in Jerusalem beneath, that is, who are still in bondage to sin, are fair game for Satan. He is going to bring judgment upon them. They're going to be hurt badly. But the true believers, the eternal Jerusalem, that is found also in the churches and congregations, cannot be harmed. Hurt not them at all. They cannot be harmed. Although we're going to learn as we go along that they will have to leave those churches, that God has given, will give us a lot more instruction about that as we go along. So here we have the setting of Jeremiah. Jeremiah is talking about God's judgment on the churches and congregations in our day, when Satan has been loosed, when we've come into that time of great tribulation. And as we go verse by verse in Jeremiah, we will see how this develops. We will see how it is proven over and over again that we're absolutely on the right track. And under no circumstance do we dare look at the book of Jeremiah and say, oh, those dirty, rotten Jews back there in the days of Jeremiah, how awful they were. We have to look at what is being said there and say, is God referring to me? Is he referring to my church? I better listen very carefully. And so in our next study, we're going to go on, we're going to go back to Jeremiah chapter 1, and we're going to look at the first statement of judgment. Verse 16, I will utter my judgments against them, touching all their wickedness. And then God lists some of the main items of their wickedness. And we'll take a look at that in our next study.